Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
As we're starting to make our ascent and countdown to Pesach, we'll get started shortly with all kinds of good Pesach messages of everything from the calendar and how to calculate the day, the meaning of the days, and all that kind of good stuff. But I think today I'm going to start, it'll be a two-part message today, and then the next time we're here I'll do the second part of this. On the wilderness, because the wilderness is a big part of Passover, because remember that before coming into the Promised Land, they were 40 years in the wilderness. There's a lot of lessons we learn, and the Passover is all about from the Passover, that's where they went. They went from the Passover to the wilderness. So you never go from Passover to the Promised Land. You know, there's always got to be a wilderness. And that's the reason that I'm going to start today, why the wilderness, you know, and then next week go into more of lessons in the wilderness the next time that we're here. I want to start with Revelation 12, in verse 13. Talking a little bit about this last night when there's war in heaven, a time that's very close to coming right now. It's kind of a little chilling to think about it, you know, like we're right on the edge of this story happening, this great war in heaven, when Satan will get cast down. And, you know, and then the verse 12 says, you know, happy to those in heaven because he's out of your way, but woe to those on the earth because he's here and he knows his time is short and he's here to wreak havoc. And then verse 13 of Revelation 12 says, and when the dragon saw that he was cast onto the earth, he pursued the woman who bore the male child. And two wings of a great eagle were given to the woman that she might fly into the wilderness to her place where she is nourished there for a time and times and half a time from the away from the serpent's face. And the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a river after the woman that he might cause her to be carried off by the river. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed the river which the dragon threw out of his mouth. You can only imagine maybe some kind of flash flood, horrible storm coming, and then maybe a great earthquake. You know, we know in the Rift Valley, right, is where some of the biggest earthquakes ever. A matter of fact, those two mountain ranges, the one in Jordan on the other side of the Jordan and the one here in Israel, at one time were almost together, and now they're separated. That mountain range is still moving. I forget what it is. It's only like an inch or something a year, but if you look down in Timna, the Timna copper mines, and then the copper mines from Punan, where Solomon got the copper for the temple, which we're going to be at Shavuot, they're about 20 miles away from each other now. So that's a big movement over several thousand years, but it's showing you that it's still moving there. So the earth helped the woman and opened its mouth and swallowed the river which the dragon threw out of his mouth. And like I said, it could be another earthquake. And the dragon was enraged over the woman and went away to make war with the rest of her seed, those keeping the commandments of Yahweh and having the testimony of Yeshua Messiah. So apparently there's people that are fleeing at this time, there's people that are left. But the point of it is, why I use the scripture is, you know, we talked about last week about Babylon and different things about Babylon, and many people are always asking about the 144,000. And where is the quote-unquote place of safety? You know, matter of fact, some people think that it's over in Petra in Jordan. And there's brethren that have camped out near that area, you know, and they're waiting there because they don't want to be left out of it. But my point is, when you look in Scripture, very clearly, you have seven direct commands to flee the land of Babylon. Somebody wrote in the website a few days back, and they were asking about, with Babylon's destruction, they said, what about Psalm 91? I think I'm going to read Psalm 91 here today. Yeah, I will read it. But, you know, it talks about protection. But where was Psalm 91 during the Babylonian conquest? Where was Psalm 91 during the Romans? So Psalm 91 is a great general psalm of Yahweh's protection on people. But, hey, time and chance happens to everybody. And when Yahweh says that a land is going to be destroyed because of their wickedness, you know, and he's actually warning you to do it, you'd have to be crazy not to listen to the warning. You know, if we knew it, like now Andy's working with these early warning systems, right? Let's say you had an early warning system that was up to a day. And you knew it. You could get it that there, you've got 24 hours and an earthquake's coming that we know is going to be a 9 in Galilee. Would we just be hanging out and sitting here and saying, well, we'll hope on Psalm 91? Of course not. That would be ridiculous, because Yahweh gives us a mind, and he gives us also legs to move when we have to. And in faith, you have to make decisions. And in faith, you have to do things. And that's what the wilderness is really all about. It's about faith. So of course, Yahweh will protect us. But at the same rate, when Yahweh tells you to do something, you have to act on it. It's that simple. So with Babylon, you're told to act. Flee the land of Babylon. 7 direct commands. You know. Yet over here with the wilderness, there's nothing you can do. What you have to do is be faithful in other things. And if you're accountable, you're taken there. You're taken there. So it's not something you're going to try to get to. In Matthew 24, 24 through 26. It says, for false messiahs and false prophets will rise up. And we know this is the Olivet prophecy of the times we're living in. And they will give great signs and wonders so as to lead astray, if possible, even the chosen. Behold, I tell you beforehand. Then if they say to you, behold, he's in the wilderness, do not go out. Behold, he's in the inner rooms, do not believe. And in the next message, we'll talk a little bit more about Yeshua teaching these people in the wilderness. But apparently there's people who are not going to be there, like we just saw. There's some that go to the wilderness, there's some that aren't in the wilderness. In the physical wilderness, the literal wilderness. And when that day happens, if you're not there, you know, if you hear, you know, that the remnant of the congregation was taken somewhere and you're not there, he says, don't try to find it. So you can't camp out in front of Petra, which I don't believe is the place anyway. It's funny because if you go back 50 years ago, Petra was, they said it was like an insurmountable place. There's this little seat to get in, and it's the only way in and the only way out. But now you can get in through the back. You know, they opened it all up. They made hotels over there. So it's not exactly the wilderness anymore. You know, and it's not even the biblical Selah, which we will be going to the biblical Selah at Shavuot. The biblical Selah is about 25 miles from there. And we know it. We know for sure that it's the biblical Selah. But Petra is not the biblical Selah. It's more of a Nabataean place that was built in a place of tombs that are there mostly. But that's for another subject. But again, going back to this, only Yahweh can take you there. So today, I'm not going to talk about the physical wilderness. I'm not going to talk about this physical place that some brethren will go to, and some will be purified at other places. What I want to talk today about is the spiritual wilderness. The wilderness that every one of us is either in right now or going through. And one thing is certain, you will not get to the physical wilderness without going through the spiritual wilderness. The spiritual wilderness literally is a bridge that takes us from the world into the real wilderness. Because in this day, when you look at the Israelites, and like I said, next week we'll go into more examples of some of the things they went through. And of course, as we'll read about today, griping is never something that would be acceptable to Yahweh. You know, that we're going to gripe and be complaining about things. But at the same rate, when you look at what they went through, there was at least reason to gripe. You know, if you had no water for 3 or 4 days out in the desert where sand is coming in your throat all day long, at least there's a reason, you know, or if you didn't have food or whatnot. And at the same rate, these people came from slavery. So certainly they were not living high off the hog. They're living several hundred years as slaves, where literally they have taskmasters over there that are beating them. They're forcing them to do these things. They're in the mud pits. And it wasn't an easy life. Nothing like the life we're living today. Some of us have easier lives. Some of the brethren in third world have less easy lives. But I've been to these places in Asia, in Africa, in South America. And they're certainly not living like the Israelites did in slavery. I don't know of any place, except maybe places like North Korea and China that I haven't been to, where brethren may be in concentration camps, where they're being assaulted on a daily basis and forced to work in labor camps. And again, there are some of them, like those places, but it's not an overall situation we have today like they had. And yet, even living in those dire circumstances, when they went to the wilderness, look how they failed. They failed miserably. So for us, in the society we live in today, you know, in the world of commercial Babylon, where so many things are just part of our life and we take for granted, and I'm not here today to say whether they're good, bad, or indifferent. My only point is to make that the wilderness, they won't be there. Things like refrigerators, right? Not a bad thing to have a refrigerator. It saves us from our food spoiling. It saves us from having to cook everything every day. But in the wilderness, there won't be refrigerators. There won't be indoor toilets. You know, there won't be indoor showers. There won't be all these things that we have today. Washing machines, dryers, whatever you name it. So our mentality-wise, there has to be a change. And that's the whole point of the spiritual wilderness, is to one by one break down these barriers that could cause us to be gripers in the real wilderness, or maybe not even be able to make it. You know, I've talked to some people in the West in years back that were honest and said, I could never live that way even one day. And even on some of the trips we've taken to try to mentally put ourselves in how Abraham lived and how the children of Israel lived, and we might stay in a tent for one night, and people think I'm joking. You know, when they say, you mean we're really going to sleep in a tent all night? Yeah. But yet when we do it, then it's amazed. They're all happy and it's fun and what you do. And then the next day, you know, the same people say, well, we should do this for a week. We should do this for a month. And the trip we're taking on Shavuot, some of the places we have to stay in tents. There's no hotels. There's nothing. We're going to the original spots of the Israelites. You can't even get a bus there. We're going to have to take jeeps or 4x4s, and we're going through dirt roads because we're going to places that people don't go to. But we know it's the places of the Israelites because we have the archaeological evidence that's been found that these are the real camps where they were at. So this is what they went through, and this is the reason why, though, that this is important to us. And just like I was saying last week, you know, it's not about just leaving a place or not leaving a place. That's the last, you know, the last checkpoint on your list. It's about first mentally here. You know, there's a message I gave a while ago, maybe I'll give it here again soon, called change of heart before change of land. And it's mentally that we have to get ourselves ready. And one of the things to mentally get ready is we really need to be leaving society. And this is something that goes all the way back to the first century, and particularly in the fourth century, when the congregation went into the wilderness after Constantine and Julian made these edicts, and then they started really taking the brethren's houses away and taking away their places of worship and everything else, and they had no other choice but to go to the wilderness. But for all those years, particularly, the main thing was we need to stay separate from the world. We have to make sure that we're not compromising in our belief system and defiling the Holy Spirit in us by being no different than the world. You know, and the world is supposed to see that we're different, that we're separate, that we're more holy, that we're living a different life. And it's supposed to make them want to be more like us in our honesty and in our integrity, instead of us compromising with our belief system to be more like the world. So again, the wilderness, the spiritual wilderness, is a bridge out of the world to the real wilderness and the reasons why we need it. So number one, like we're just saying here, is to sanctify us. The first reason why we need the spiritual wilderness is to sanctify us from the world. 1 John 2, in verse 15. Do not love the world, nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Because all that which is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away in its lust, but the one doing the will of Elohim abides forever. So how much do we love the kingdom of Yahweh, and how much do we love the world? And like I said, maybe 150 years ago, when it was Little House on the Prairie, there wasn't really a big difference of those two. Maybe the difference was the Sabbath day and what meats we're eating and that kind of thing. But in Little House on the Prairie, you know, whether you were a Baptist, whatever, compared to maybe a true Sabbath-keeping believer, it might have been more in those little things. But in character, most of them had the same character. People were honest. They didn't have to lock their doors. They shake their hand. You know, what they say, they're going to keep their word. But we're not living on Little House on the Prairie anymore. It's not that way. and in this world we live in. And just like we said in the last few years, to not only legalize something like homosexuality, but then to shove it down the throats of people every day that it's normal. And not only is it normal now, it's actually more normal than heterosexual people. It's like, what, are you joking? And yet people are buying it. And if you don't believe it, you're looked at as some kind of racist because you don't believe these things. So if there's ever a time where this is true, this is written 2,000 years ago when those things were not. I mean, nobody, up until the last few years, nobody in their right mind would have ever thought that a homosexual lifestyle is equal to a family with a wife and a husband and children. Not in their wildest dreams. As a matter of fact, that's why most homosexuals, they would never even come out and say that they were homosexuals, because they knew it was a shameful thing. It was a wicked thing. Whatever their reason for doing it is beside the point. They just knew it wasn't normal. But today, people flaunt it as it's a better alternative lifestyle. And it's not. It was sin back then. It's sin today. So that's why in this world we're living in, where Satan is just about ready to grab his throne for his 42 months, what do we want? Do we want to assimilate and be part of his world? Or do we want to stand strong in our beliefs and be separated from that? So again, the spiritual wilderness is a bridge to help us with that. Because again, in this wilderness, we're not going to have to deal with that. We will be somewhere, whoever will be there. It will be somewhere here in the Middle East, in the wilderness, literally, you know. And they'll be away from things, and they'll be away from all this other stuff, and you won't have to deal with it. But like I said, it's going to be a culture shock. And that's why now, mentally, we have to start preparing for how it's going to be. Matthew 10 and verse 37. Matthew 10, verse 37. The one loving father, mother more than me is not worthy of me. And the one loving son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take up his staff and follow after me is not worthy of me. The one finding his life will lose it. And the one losing his life on account of me shall find it. And I'll be honest, and some people have even been honest enough to tell me this, some not. But in Western society, one of the biggest reasons that some people would say they never ever would leave Babylon is because of family. Look at the scripture. The one loving father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Hey, there's nobody that loved their parents more than me. Like I said, growing up as a kid, I could not even imagine moving to the next state that's an hour away. Moving away from my family, why would I ever do that? You know, like I said, I was brought up in a strict Italian family. There's the family and there's everybody else. That's it. I would have never in a million years ever thought about it. And even when I learned the doctrine of Babylon, you know, and my congregation at that time were the ones saying, when are we leaving? And I said, I got to be honest with you. I know America's Babylon. I see it in the scripture. I said, but I don't know if I'll ever be able to leave. I honestly didn't think I could because of my ties to my family. But when the time came, Yahweh gave me the strength, and I didn't love my family any less, but I certainly love Yahweh more. And now, years later, being out of there 15 years, nothing against my family, but I see, wow, how many anniversary parties and how many parties for the second and third cousins graduating from school, all these things that I would have been obligated to go to. That would have been just time and you know, time away from Yahweh and taking my mind away. And it wound up being more of a blessing. Not that I love my family less, but like I said, I love Yahweh more. And it's got to come down to that. And I think people don't want to admit it, but this is something where each person's got to go in their prayer closet. And if Yahweh is not first in your life, you have nothing. Because certainly your mother or your father or your sister or your brother or your children, whoever it is, they're not going to be there on Resurrection Day giving you eternal life. Yahweh's got to be first. And I knew it back then, even when it was the hardest decision to leave. I knew that this time is going to pass, but in the kingdom comes, hopefully, I pray some of my family will be there. My father and mother were good people. I hope they'll be there, maybe some of my relatives. And then I'll have time to spend with them. But my time now has got to be for Yahweh. We're getting close to the kingdom. My focus has got to be on his work. And as much as, like I said, I love my family, and I have nothing against them. It's got to be Yahweh first. And he says it here, whoever does not take up his staff and follow me is not worthy of me. And I took that seriously. I read these things, I prayed to Yahweh, and I really took it seriously. Because he's got to be, for everything he did for us, he's got to be first in our life. He certainly has to be. Can't compromise with it. And for many of the early believers, they were willing to give their life for this, for not compromising with the world. Even in the littlest ways, sometimes the Roman Catholic Church would come and say, if you just start attending church and christening your children, we'll stop persecuting you. And they said, no, you'll have to kill us. And they did, sometimes killing their children, but they would not compromise because they knew that all you're doing by killing me is putting me into the kingdom that much faster. You know, I'm either going to live X amount of years in this world and have more persecution, and that's fine if that's Yahweh's will, but I'm not going to compromise. And you want to take my life, you know what you're doing? I'm going to sleep in the grave, and the next waking moment I'll be in his kingdom. So if Yahweh wants to use you as his tool to put me in his kingdom faster, that's fine. But as far as compromising with our beliefs, no. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And we need to have that same faith today. Because I said this at the school many times. You will not die for a doubt. You either have to believe it in faith completely, or you're going to fall away when the persecution comes. But you're not going to die for a doubt. You're not going to die for a doubt. Number two, the second reason that Yahweh has us in the spiritual wilderness is to get complete reliance on Yahweh. To get complete reliance on him and not Babylon. Numbers 9. Numbers, the 9th chapter, in verse 15. Numbers 9:15 says, and on the day that the tabernacle was reared, the cloud covered the tabernacle, even the tabernacle and the testimony. And at evening there was on the tabernacle the appearance of fire until morning. So it was always the cloud covered it, and the appearance of fire by night. And whoever the and whenever the cloud was taken up over the tabernacle, then after the sons of Israel pulled up stakes and in the place where the cloud abode, there the sons of Israel encamped. By the mouth of Yahweh, the sons of Israel pulled up stakes, and by the mouth of Yahweh they encamped. All the days that the cloud remained over the tabernacle, they remained in camp. And when the cloud tarried over the tabernacle many days, then the sons of Israel kept the charge of Yahweh and did not pull up stakes. And when the cloud was over the tabernacle many days, by the mouth of Yahweh they encamped, and by the mouth of Yahweh they pulled up stakes. And so when the cloud was there from evening until morning, when the cloud was taken up in the morning, then they pulled up stakes. Whether by day or night, when the cloud was taken up, then they pulled up stakes. Whether 2 days or a month or days, when the cloud tarried over the tabernacle to remain over it, the sons of Israel remained in camp and did not pull up stakes. And when it was lifted up, they pulled up stakes. By the mouth of Yahweh they encamped, and by the mouth of Yahweh they pulled up stakes. They kept the charge of Yahweh by the mouth of Yahweh by the hand of Moses. So can you imagine out here, you know, you're talking about the tabernacle, not a little feet, all the different things that are there, carrying the Ark of the Covenant, all of the different boards to make the tabernacle, the coverings on the top, the flooring and all this stuff. And you're talking about a lot of people. So it's not just the tabernacle, picking all your stuff up, putting your personal tents. So can you imagine with roughly 2 million people, you're doing all this, right? And you're just moved, and you're going wherever you're going in the desert, you don't have water, you're traveling, and then finally Moses says, okay, the cloud just stopped. Time to make camp. All right, finally, you know, you're putting it all together, doing all your work. It's the end of the day, and you're really, really tired after doing it all. And then you look up, and it's, uh-oh. There it goes. Take it down. So, and you didn't know. It could be a day, it could be a week, it could be a month, it could be years, you know? So you never knew. But what was the reason of this? Two reasons. Number one, it kept them totally reliant on Yahweh. They had to rely on Yahweh for their substance. And that's why the manna, you know, the manna is really a two-edged sword. You know, one of my saddest scriptures in the Bible and happiest scriptures is the day they come into the promised land. Because they're all happy and finally, after 40 years of wandering, they're in the promised land, except for that one little line that says, and the manna ceased. And it's such a sad line, because here they are in the promised land, but now they don't have, you know, Father Yahweh, like a Jewish mama or a Jewish papa over there feeding them every day. And it's kind of sad to see that, because I look at it as such, you know, like Yahweh says in Isaiah, I think it's Isaiah 45, you know, can a woman ever forget a suckling child? Well, yay, maybe a woman could. These days they throw them in garbage cans, newborns, but I will never forget you. You know, so here it is that Yahweh nurtured and fed these people every single day. What a miracle for 40 years. How many miracles? You know, that's thousands of miracles just with the manna every day. But then it stopped. You know, they come into the promised land. Now he says, okay, now you're going to go and you're going to do it on their own. So that's the first reason. The first reason here for the cloud moving and then moving with the cloud is that Yahweh would be their provider. But the second reason, which is just as important, is that they couldn't build a life in the world. See, the wilderness was temporary. The wilderness wasn't a place of permanency. You know, they were still nomads. Remember, Abraham is a nomad. He's a shepherd. You know, he's got flocks and sheep, which means he goes from place to place. He has nowhere. You know, like he says, even when he comes to the promised land, this isn't his land. He's a wanderer in his own land. And did he stay here? No. He went to Beersheba, he goes down to Egypt, he comes back here, he's over here in Bethlehem. They were all over the place because he's a nomad, you know. But then he goes from a shepherd to a farmer, you know, when they come into the promised land, not Abraham, but his descendants. And farmers show permanency because when you're a farmer, you need land, you have to till it. It shows the permanency of Yahweh's covenant with you. So here in the wilderness, there was no permanency. This wasn't the place to build a life. So instead of, you know, they had to stay in tents because they were nomads when they're going to place, but they couldn't get stones and build a nice big house or get wood and build a house because it wasn't the time. You know, because when the cloud moved, they had to move. So the whole point of the wilderness, and here we are in the spiritual wilderness, right? It's not to build a life now. This isn't the time for the picket fence and the 2.3 children. You know, if you could tell me what a 0.3 child is. I don't know. Never got to that point, what a 0.3 child is. But it's not the time. It doesn't mean we can't enjoy life. It doesn't mean we can't have children. Just maybe not a 0.3. But what it means is, like the Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7, that we use it without abusing. That we have without possessing. You know, that this isn't it. This isn't the end of the road. It's not about building my legacy in this world. It's about preparation for the kingdom of Yahweh that's right at the top of that right over the top of that hill. You know, and here we are. It's not 1945. It's not the beginning of the last days. And we're wondering, will I be alive or not, you know, when this comes? We're in the end of it now. You know, we're in the last of the last days. So whether that means 5 years or 10 years or maybe even 20 years, what's the difference? You know, the time goes quick. Last 20 has gone quick, this will go as quick. What it means, though, is that kingdom will be here in my lifetime, if Yahweh allows me to be alive, and that's what I'm living for. I'm not living for this. I'm not living for Satan's world. I'm not living for all these evil worldly governments. I'm not living for homosexuality as a lifestyle choice, that abortion is a woman's right to choose. I'm not living for the evils of this world. No, we're ambassadors for something greater. We're ambassadors to proclaim the kingdom that's coming. And we're not talking about 2,000 years from now. We're talking it's coming now. It's coming in this generation. Because Yeshua said, it will not pass till all these things come about. So that's part of this wilderness, that it takes time for us to change that mindset. To go from a mindset of permanency into our own goals and our own ways into Yahweh's. And like it says, not that any of those things are wrong. But Matthew 6:33, seek ye first the kingdom and all these things will be given to you. So we don't have to walk around with chains on our back like monks in medieval times. You know, we don't have to take vows of celibacy and all this crazy stuff. No, we can go out and enjoy marriage and children and our lives in general. Yeshua said, I came to give life and give it more abundantly. But that is not our first priority. Our first priority is the kingdom of Yahweh. Our first priority is finishing his work. Our first priority is following the cloud wherever it's going to go. And today it might be Israel. Tomorrow it might be Armenia. Who knows where it'll be the next day? Maybe China. You know, it's something that I always felt in my heart somewhere down the line, if Yahweh blessed me, I'd love to go to China. There's underground Sabbath keepers there. I'd love to meet them, work with them, help them. And who knows, whatever is in His will. But that's the point in your personal life. You've got to see the cloud move. And this is where brethren get in trouble, and this is where brethren fall away, because they don't see the cloud move. And when the cloud moves, they stay behind without Yahweh's covering, without the covering of the elders, the congregation. And what happens? They get into trouble, they fall away, and some of them completely sometimes go on it. So in your personal life, this is something that should be, if not a daily prayer, at least bi-daily, every couple of days or every week, you need to be praying to Yahweh that He gives you spiritual vision to know when the cloud is moving and to know where to follow it and where you need to go when that cloud is moving. I always like to tell this story when we had just left America after, I don't know how long we were out of there, but not that long. And we were in the airport over here, not this airport, in Ben-Gurion. It was the old airport, which wasn't a very happy place. They had long, long lines, and you had to get on these security lines. Sometimes you'd wait for hours, and if they wanted to taunt you at that time, the security wasn't as professional as they are today, they would. And they took me in Petra, and they took us in a back room, you know, because sometimes they would just pick you out, and they'd say, come with us. And they went through everything. I mean, they took all our stuff out. They even took at those times we didn't have digital cameras yet. We had regular cameras. They took the film out of our camera and ruined it. And I said to the person, one of the security people, I said, wow. I said, you know, you'd never get away with this in America. And he looked at me and he said, you're not in America. And I realized, you're right. You know, I'm a wanderer without a land. You know, I left Babylon. I'm not there anymore. Never forget the day we left by boat from Tampa in Florida. And I can still remember today as that boat was leaving the shore and seeing the land and as the water's coming between you and the land. And you're saying, that's it. That's it. I'm leaving Babylon. And I've visited many times. I'll probably, Yahweh willing, visit again. But I left Babylon. That day, I left it. In my mind, I left it. I left behind the system. I left behind any goals and aspirations that I had over there. I left it. I left it. And it was at that point, Yahweh, where is your cloud going? And since that day, we tried to follow. We stayed in Honduras for 7 months. And I'll never forget, I tell the story of the miracle tank that we had. You know, in Babylon, we didn't have tanks of gas. You just turn the gas on, you know, and then you get a bill at the end of the month, you pay it. What's the big deal? But over here, they have these funny tanks. You know, oh, you got to go buy a tank. So we get a tank, and I said to the guy, well, how long do these tanks last? He said, well, it depends on how much you use it. If you use it a lot, maybe it'll last 2 weeks. If you don't use it so much, maybe 3 weeks, maybe a little longer, a few extra days. And we were with a family with 7 children that were using it day and night. So I figured maybe 1 week if we get through. All of a sudden a month went by and I thought, that's strange, the tank is still going. Then 2 months went by. I thought, wow, this is really strange. After 3 months, word is getting around in the village and people are coming, they want to see the tank. We hear you have this tank, you know. It's turning into, I guess, one of these like shrine type things. And then the 4th month, the 5th month, that tank lasted for exactly 6 months, and the night before we left Honduras, we went to turn it on, and the tank was empty. We knew it. You know, you knew this is the sign. The tank is gone. It's time to go. It's time to leave. Matter of fact, that even happened here at the school this year. We used the tank, and it ran out the same thing, the last day that the students were here, that the tank ran out. I had another story that happened in Cyprus with a washing machine, you know. We didn't have a washing machine, and my wife is very good, you know, being European. Even from when we were in Honduras, we had the washing screen, you know, like that you rub your clothes on. And, you know, when you're talking about big, though, towels and some of those other things, it's not so easy. And we're going to a Bible study one day, and there near the next to the dumpster is an old washing machine. She said, that's mine. I said, come on, nobody throws out a washing machine that works. She goes, no, I'm praying about it. I know it's mine. So I said, okay, I'll tell you what. We'll go to the Bible study. If we come back and it's still there, then we'll take it. We lived on the 2nd floor with no elevator, and I'm thinking, I don't want to lug this thing up on my back if it doesn't work. Lo and behold, we come back, the washing machine's there, we take it upstairs and it works. It works perfect. So we stayed there several years, you know, used the washing machine, and again, the night before we're leaving, what happens? The washing machine doesn't work anymore. You know, so some of these little things, that the blessing of Yahweh, the provision of Him. Because to us, that wash machine was like manna. It was something from heaven. We couldn't afford one. We didn't have it. You know, the same with the guests. This was Yahweh's provision. And in those days, it was a lot different than these days. They were tough days. We had no money. You know, we went down to Honduras with, I worked my whole life. We had a whole container of everything. And beside paying over and over to, you had to pay this tax and that tax, and you had to pay to get your stuff out here. Half of it was broken from taking it out from America. And I realized, well, you don't leave Babylon with all this stuff in your back. You're better off selling everything, putting it into cash, and buying what you need. But we wound up leaving there with Honduras with virtually nothing. You know, two suitcases and some clothes. So a big lesson that we had learned from that point was that Yahweh will care for you. Yahweh will be your care. And when we lived there, we had a lot of things. I mean, sometimes we'd be walking down the street and someone we never knew before that only spoke Greek, and they'd be calling us over. Andrew, do we know those people? I don't know. And you'd come up and they'd have a big basket of fruit and they'd say, here, here. And we're like, what is it for? And they'd point up to heaven, you know. And we really, that's where we learned Yahweh's provision. Yahweh's provision. We started finding money in the streets. They started out that they were equivalent to about a penny. But like Petra always says, you have to honor the little ones in order to get the big ones. And they used to sell in Cyprus these things called halloumi loaf. It was a little like halloumi cheese that was so good. But of course, in those days, we didn't have money. 35 cents was 35 cents. But as we would keep our pennies, you know, when we get up to 35, we're like, yeah, now we can buy a halloumi loaf. And it comes from Yahweh. It didn't come from us. Then all of a sudden, those pennies started turning into nickels, and then into quarters, and then into bills. And I'll tell you something, in my whole life, one time did I find money. I was 11 years old, I was in a Kentucky Fried Chicken, there was a $20 bill on the floor. I picked it up and gave it to my mom, you know, it was nobody's, it was just laying there. That's the only time I ever found money in my life. And to find money every day, every time I went out preaching was something. And it was up to Yahweh, whether it was the penny or whether it was bills. And some of them were big bills. You know, 20 Cyprus pounds in those days was equivalent to almost $40. It was almost 2 to 1 to the dollar. So we were finding it all the time. On a consistent basis, we were finding about $100 to $150 a month, which paid our rent. Our rent was about $180. So it was covering us because we didn't have the money to pay. But it showed us something. It showed us you have to trust in Yahweh. And we never thought about it, you know. I mean, I think now, you know, 15 years later, what was I thinking? Because we went to Cyprus with nothing. We had enough money. We figured it out because there was a hostel that was there that was about $7 a day. And we figured it out. We got 23 days. Well, what are we going to do after 23? I don't know, but Yahweh will do something. It's 23 days we have, though, that we have to live. That's a long time. It's not one night. So 23 days in those days was like forever. And then we knew a guy over there who wasn't turned out to be a false prophet. He was calling himself Elijah the prophet. You know, we knew something was suspicious when he had this little bag that said, Jesus is Lord. Don't think Elijah the prophet, the real Elijah, would have a bag like that. But anyway, this guy was very, taught us a lot about faith. Now, I remember I used to go out with him. He was an older guy. And he'd say, why are you going so fast? He said, you know something? We just passed that street. The guy down there in that street could have been the whole reason why you're living today. And you just passed him. You Americans, you know, and he'd start yelling at me. You're going too fast, but he told me a lot about it. So he offered that we could live with him in an apartment when we first got there. After that, we thought, wow, this is great. Thank you, Yahweh. What happens? Turns out to be a false prophet. Passover's coming up. And I said to him, I said, you know, Elijah, Passover's next week. He said, no, I'm going to a birthday party and you're coming with me. I said, birthday party? Yeah, I met these college kids and they're interested. And I said, it's Passover. I said, you could do whatever you want to do. I said, but come next week, I'm keeping the Passover. He went wild, knocked stuff off the table, started screaming and yelling. And I said to Petra, we got to get out of here. So I wrote him a letter And I told him, I said, I'm sorry. And it was, all these things I see as tests of Yahweh. Because here we are, we're broke, we don't have money, he's paying, we're not paying to live with him. And Yahweh's saying, okay, what's going to happen? And I said to her, I said, Petra, we've come this far. We've given up everything. We've given up our land. We've given our money, everything. Are we going to now go back and compromise over a false prophet? We can't. I'd rather live on the beach. You know, I'd rather sleep on the beach. I'll sleep anywhere. It doesn't make a difference. But that's the point. The further you go in faith, the more you got to lose. But you got to take that first step. You got to take that first step. And once you start walking miles in faith, boy, you don't want to turn back. Because you've come too long on your road to turn back. And then there's too much at stake. But so many things that we learned in those early days about the wilderness. As a matter of fact, that's when I started putting these sermons together. You know, on what the wilderness is really about. Realizing. Because we didn't leave thinking we're going into the spiritual wilderness to prepare. We found out when we were there. We found out, wow, I can't believe it. I can't believe how little faith I had. And I think of the Laodicean, you're rich and increase in goods, in need of nothing, and really you're poor, you're blind, you're miserable and naked. So when I left America, I'm thinking, wow, I'm one of the faithful ones. And yet only a few months later, Yahweh shows me, you don't have any faith. You have no faith whatsoever. But don't worry, I have faith. You don't need faith. What you need is my faith. That's what you need. And all you have to do is believe that, and I believed it. Maybe because I had no other choice. What other choice did I have? But all I know, I believed it and it changed my life. It changed my life. And there at first, where you're seeing these things, and then the next time you're hoping it happens, and then you're hoping it happens, but then you just get to the point, day after day after day, where then you're expecting it. You know, so you've got to be able to get that way. You have to, it's got to be so real to you, Yahweh in heaven and his provision. And I started to think about it. In America, I had my own business. I had money. When I needed something, I didn't pray to Yahweh. If I needed shoes, I'd just go and pay for it with credit card or with cash, with a check. When my rent came, same thing, write a check out. I had so many checks, my hand used to hurt at the end of the month because I used to write a lot of checks out. But I never prayed once. We lived in Italy for 2 years. We were wondering, why is it so cheap? You know, we were thinking in this area, we're asking people, is there cancer here or something? Because it was virtually nothing, you know, like $150 a month to live in this house. You know, it wasn't a big house, but still. And we found out it was because they had no running water. They only had a cistern there. So after we're in the house, we realized our cistern is broken. You know, it's like Jeremiah 3. We're living in with a cistern that has holes, you know, and there's no water there. And then we had to go in. Boy, what a scary thing that was, going in this little hole in there that hadn't been cleaned in about 50 years, not knowing what kind of dead animal or anything could be in there. But we did it. That was an experience. But after that, now we got the opportunity to pray for rain. You know, Yahweh, now fill our cistern up. And I thought, my whole life, I never once remember ever praying for rain. You know how many times I prayed, don't rain, because we're having a picnic tomorrow, because we're going on vacation. That was the first time in my life I ever prayed for rain. And all these things were impressionable on my mind, how little faith I had. Meaningly, how much in my life I wasn't relying on Yahweh for anything. That it was all of my own riches and my own whatever that I had, but I never gave Yahweh the opportunity to bless me because I never realized or I didn't need it. You know, when I was hungry, what did I do? I went in the refrigerator. I'd go to the supermarket. But when you don't have it, what do you have to do? You have to pray. You have to pray to Yahweh and ask him. And when you ask him, what does he do? He honors that and he gives it to you. And he wants to give us more and more, but why don't we receive? Like it says in the book of Jacob, because we don't ask. And then when we ask, sometimes we're asking out of the wrong reasons. So it's so important that we learn this. We have to get complete reliance on Yahweh. And that's what the spiritual wilderness is about. Revelation 14. Revelation 14, verse 1. And I saw and behold the Lamb standing on Mount Zion, and with him were 144,000 with the name of his Father having been written in their forehead. We'll drop down to verse 4. These are the ones who had not become defiled, for they were pure. These are the ones following the Lamb wherever he may go. These were redeemed from among men, being the first fruits to Yahweh and to the Lamb, and no decoy was found in their mouth, for they are unmarked before the throne of Yahweh. They're following the Lamb wherever he goes. So that's part of this. That's the cloud moving. It's following the Lamb wherever he's going. So how can we make our plans before we know Yahweh's plans? And like I said, whether it's a promotion at work or a new position or moving to another area, you got to pray first. You got to ask Yahweh, is this your will? Is your work going to be furthered by me doing this? Or is it going to be hindered? And I found that out the hard way, that I realized in Babylon, so many things that people thought were blessings were traps of Satan. The fact that you got a big promotion with a lot more money, it's not necessarily a blessing if you got to move across the country and now your children don't have grandparents anymore and they don't have cousins anymore. And maybe you're going from the secluded place you were living into the city, right into the den of iniquity. That's not so much a blessing. And blessings are not always equated by just money, dollars, and cents. Blessings are equated by the fruitfulness it's going to bear in your life. And the fruitfulness that your life is going to bear in other lives. That's what a blessing is. But like I said, Babylon, it always comes down to dollars and cents. Dollars and cents. Which it can be, but not always. Deuteronomy 8. Deuteronomy, the 8th chapter. You shall be watchful to do every commandment which I am commanding you today, so that you may live and may multiply and may go in and possess the land which Yahweh has sworn to your fathers. And you shall remember all the way which Yahweh your Elohim has caused you to go these 40 years in the wilderness, in order to humble you, to try you, to know that which is in your heart, whether you will keep his commandments or not. That's what the wilderness is about. Like I say, life is a test. That's the only thing that matters. You know, and sometimes that test is, you go to the doctor and you find out you had cancer, or you get a phone call and someone you love died, you know, or you lost your job, or you didn't get your visa, whatever it is. But life is a test, and the test is how we react to it. It's not the actual thing that's the trouble, it's what our reaction is to that trouble, and that's what he says here. It's all a test. And Yahweh sent them 40 years in the wilderness to what? To humble them. To humble them and to try them and to know which is in your heart, whether you will keep his commandments or not. You know, it's easy to tithe when you're making a lot of money. But how easy is it to tithe? Maybe if you have no money and you only have $10, but it don't make a difference. You know, whether you're tithing $100,000 off of $1 million or you're tithing $1 out of 10, a tithe is a tithe. You know, and that's what Yahweh is testing us, how faithful we will be. Or with the Sabbath question. You don't know how many times I've been in third world countries, and particularly Africa, where they say, I don't have money. If I start keeping the Sabbath, I'm going to lose my job. And I'm reading the scripture. The person that works shall die. And I say, what don't you understand about that? You know, jobs come and jobs go. So what? You know, at the end of your life, how many people are thinking about the job they had when they were 25? Of course not. That I'm going to violate Yahweh's Sabbath, the greatest blessing he's given me in my life, then all of a sudden I'm going to turn on it, I'm going to violate it, I'm going to sin by working on the Sabbath, simply because I don't want to have the faith that he'll provide for me from another way? Of course not. And that's why they say the Sabbath is the test commandment. Because everyone, I can sit here and say, oh, I don't lie, I don't steal, I don't commit adultery. How do you know what's in my mind and my heart? But the Sabbath, I'm either worshiping or working. It's one or the other. You can't fake it. So it's the same penalty each way you look at it. Like he says here, it's to humble us and to try us. These 40 years in the wilderness, in order to humble you, to try you, to know what is in your heart, whether you will keep his commandments or not. And he has humbled you and caused you to hunger and caused you to eat the manna, which you have not known, and your fathers had not known, in order to cause you to know that man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of Yahweh. You know, Yeshua and Moses, they fasted 40 days. Moses fasted 40 days, came down, fasted another 40 days. Something that seems humanly impossible, to go 40 days without food and water. But Yahweh somehow supplied it Because man shall not live by bread alone, but every word that proceeds out of the mouth of Yahweh. So can he provide the same way for me if I lose my job over the Sabbath? That's the test. The point is, do we believe it? That's all the test is, whether we believe it or not. Your clothing did not wear out and your foot did not swell these 40 years. Can you imagine? I know I have some clothes that are now going on 25 years. Some of them look brand new. Sweaters, jackets, you know, that I had. Now, I don't know if they'll last 40 years. Maybe. I hope so. But it's amazing that to look here, that in 40 years in the wilderness, their sandals didn't wear out, their clothes didn't wear out. How great is Yahweh? So if he can do that, why couldn't he give a job to somebody that lost their job over the Sabbath day? And you have known with your heart that as a man disciplines his son, Yahweh your Elohim disciplines you. So the trials we go through are for a benefit. They're part of the wilderness experience. It's to teach us, to train us, to totally be reliant on him. And you shall keep the commandments of Yahweh your Elohim, to walk in his ways and to fear him. And Yahweh your Elohim brings you into a good land, a land of streams of waters, of fountains, of depths, of springs, out of valleys and hills. A land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey. Seven species, right? And listed in the order of their importance. A land in which you shall eat bread without want. You shall not lack anything in it. A land whose stones are iron, and you shall dig copper out of its mountains. And you shall eat and be satisfied, and you shall bless Yahweh Elohim in the good land which he has given to you. You know, wow, what a promise. And here we are, being blessed, one of the few people that Yahweh is allowed to be here at this time. Most people that will hear this later are in diaspora, and they're thinking about this promise and coming here and getting it. Here we are, just a few weeks away from the harvest, the barley that's coming, and the wheat, and the new land. And here we are year after year, some of us that have been blessed every year to be here at Sukkot and be a fulfillment of this, simply from believing Yahweh. But then as he goes on here, as we get down to verse 11, take heed to yourself, though, lest you forget Yahweh your Elohim, so as not to keep his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I am commanding you this day. Then when you have eaten and are satisfied and have built goodly houses and have lived in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and your gold have multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, then it rises into your heart and you forget Yahweh your Elohim, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slaves. And unfortunately, I think this is what's happened in Western society to many of the people in Babylon. And when I say Babylon, I don't just mean America, but really Western societies, first world places. That because of the blessings and because they have everything that they need, they've forgotten Yahweh. I know most of the congregations there, whether it's the Sabbath-keeping congregations like Church of God and Seventh-day Adventists, or it's even the Sacred Name congregations, the Sacred Names Assembly, most of them have forgotten Jerusalem. I don't see any except our congregation that has any focused on Israel or Jerusalem. And that's what's happened. Things got too good. Things were so, and that's exactly what he's warning against. That's what the wilderness is about. It's about getting back to our beginnings. It's about understanding, like he says over here, forget that Yahweh Elohim brought you out of Egypt, out of the house of slaves. And we know his Passover is coming. This isn't just physically these Israelites coming out of Egypt, but each of us that came out of the bondage of our sins. So when we came out of our spiritual Egypt, it wasn't just to live a nice life in Satan's world and have everything we need. It was to give back to Yahweh, to become an ambassador and a warrior for him, and to be able to go out there and bear fruit for his kingdom. And that, as like Yahweh says, it's not his will that any should perish, that we bring this message to every creature on this face of the planet, that he gives us the ability to do so and to bring the message, because all of us have come from the house of slaves, who led you through the great and dreadful wilderness with burning serpent and scorpion and thirsty ground where there is no water, who brought you water out of the flinty rock. And haven't each of us gone through that in our own way? You know, how many dry wilderness periods have we gone through, right? That there's periods where it seems like, man, there's no water, Yahweh, I need it. Maybe not physically, but I mean just dry spiritual times in our life that this happens. And what does he do? He brings us water out of the flinty rock. When we least expect it, he pours blessing upon us. who made you eat manna in the wilderness, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might prove you to do good to you in the latter end. And that's, again, the wilderness. For 40 years, they didn't have to worry about food. Number one, they didn't have a choice. In the wilderness, they couldn't grow anything. It's a desert. But it was their blessing that every day Yahweh provided. And that's what he wants us in our spiritual wilderness. He wants us to go to him daily, and he wants to provide the spiritual things that we need. That you not say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have made this for my wealth. So whatever fruit we're bearing, where is the boasting, right? Like it says, there's no boasting to any of us. Any good, any fruit that can be born out of anything that any of us do, all the glory goes to Yahweh because, number one, he gave us the ability to do it, and he put the blessing there. You know, none of us did anything that anybody else couldn't do. You know, like I said, big deal, I wrote a book. Anybody could have wrote the book. Praise Yahweh, he used my hand to do it, but he could have used somebody else's hand. So it doesn't make a difference of whose hand penned it. What makes a difference is the information that's there getting out to people to change their life. The glory goes to Yahweh. That's what we don't want to forget. That you not say in your heart, my power and my mind of my hand have made this wealth for me. But you shall remember Yahweh Elohim, for it is he who gives to you the power to make the wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he swore to your fathers as to this day. And it shall be if you forget Yahweh your Elohim, and you walk after other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that you will utterly perish. As the nations that Yahweh makes to perish before you, so you shall perish because you did not listen to the voice of Yahweh your Elohim. It's amazing, as I'm doing this book on the early congregation, and like I said, one of the amazing things that I've seen as I'm doing it is that instead of being just a succession of congregations that went one to the other, many of those congregations even exist today. But the question is, are they really still part of the true congregation? A lot of them assimilated into Protestantism. Some went back to Orthodox, like the ones in Armenia. Some of the Paulicians went back to Orthodox. Some mixed, even like the Maronites, mixed back with Catholicism in the Catholic Church. So, like he says here, and if you forget Yahweh Elohim and walk after other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you today that you will utterly perish. As the nations that Yahweh makes to perish before you, so you shall perish because you did not listen to the voice of Yahweh. So, your calling and staying in the proper truth depends on how far you take that truth and living it and walking in it every day. But as we see from history, and it's every single part of history, whether it's Paulician, Waldensian, or Seventh-day Baptist, whoever it is, Church of God, that each of them, where they fell away, was when they started to get away from the premise that made them part of that true congregation. And they started compromising back with the world, or proudly thinking that somehow their might has gotten them to where they are. All part of the wilderness. Learning in the wilderness. Exodus 16. Exodus 16. Verse 2. And all the congregation of the sons of Israel murmured against Moses.